Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
UMFM. This is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. I'm Michael Elves, and kicking things off for us tonight, that's Canadian producer Felix Cartel with Down For You, featuring Veronica on vocals from the album Next Season. And Felix Cartel will be in town next weekend playing Summer of Sound out at the Assiniboine Downs. Go to twitter.com/summerofsound for more ticket info and lineup info. Speaking of lineups, we are going to be talking to Ed DeRoche from the band Apollo Suns in a few minutes, and fingers crossed, we're going to be talking to Mike Milosh, a.k.a. Rye, in a little while. But first, brand new single from Dim Sum. This is Tadum here on 101.5 UMFM. Might be Folkfest weekend, but looking ahead to next weekend, mark your calendar for Friday the 13th. That's July 13th at the Cavern when Apollo Suns kick off their Western Canada tour. Joining me from the band, Ed Droshe. How's it going, man?
It's going good. Yeah, just getting ready for the big tour out west, and yeah, looking forward to a hometown show. It's been, God, early May we played Winnipeg, and then we've been on the road for about a month out east. So yeah, I'm looking forward to playing for the hometown crowd.
So the Eastern swing, what was the highlight or kind of most memorable experience from that one?
Well, the Maritimes, especially, everyone's so great out there, very kind, and supportive. Yeah, we were out there for a week, and we stayed at a couple like Airbnbs that were like right on the ocean, and we had like fresh fish, like caught like the day before type thing, and so that was really nice. There's some really good shows in Halifax, Montreal, Ottawa was great, Windsor. Yeah, got to meet a lot of great people, and yeah, there's some really cool things going on out east. So yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was long, it was like a month. But yeah, I got to see a lot of Canada that I've never seen before, and it was like different parts were great for like different reasons, you know, and you know, yeah, it's cool.
And looking at this Western, John, it's like about like 2.5 weeks, is that right? Something like that.
Yeah.
So you've got a couple festival dates, and then some bar shows and stuff like that. In terms of the like. Were you booking this around festivals, or were you just kind of looking to head west because you'd done the eastern leg?
Yeah, well, we've done west last year. We did it twice, maybe like three times if you count like weekend shows in Saskatchewan and Alberta. But it kind of started off. We got booked for two festivals in Nelson and Lake Country, and then it was like, oh, okay, well, I guess we're gonna go out west now. So I started building a tour around those two festival dates, and then we got Golden Sound Music Festival, which is amazing because we get to open up for the Wooden Sky and Harpoonist and the Axe Murderer.
Oh, that's a nice bill.
We're like one band before them on the main stage, so we're really looking forward to that. And then about a couple months ago, we got into Ness Creek, which is like, I'm really excited. I've heard great things about it. And then the lineup's great. And we get to like do a workshop with this Toronto, like Calypso jazz funk band called Kobo Town. And so when we got those festivals, I just started building bars, like kind of like a bar tour around that, and looking at like summer music series in like BC. So like every municipality does like every Thursday night at the Old Market Square of Kelowna, they do shows there. So we've got like those types of things in there as well. Yeah, it just started working out, and then we've built a really nice community around us in parts of Western Canada. So it came together really fast, which is great because, when you start hitting those places more and more, you make more friends and new fans and contacts and, through like promoters and festival buyers and all that stuff. So, yeah, so that one came together really fast. And then we're like, well, I guess we're doing that now. So it's like a whole other thing for us to like be anchoring a tour on like four festivals, which is great.
I was just having a quick look at the Ness Creek lineup. You should definitely check out the Garys if you overlap with them while they're there. That's a great band.
Yeah, they're from Regina, right?
I think Saskatoon.
Oh, sweet. Okay, cool. Yeah.
They're definitely a Saskatchewan band.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I think we're getting there like Friday at like 2:00 because we play Regina on the Thursday, and then Ness Creek is like feeding us and whatnot, and like we get to have dinner, which is amazing. When you start getting into like bigger festivals, they like, you know, they like give you accommodations and all that stuff. But so we definitely have time to like check out bands. So hopefully we do get to see the Garys, because Saturday we have to play this like workshop and then drive from Big River all the way to Calgary. I think we're pretty much just going to our show immediately and like setting up in Calgary. So yeah, that's going to be a long day for sure.
No doubt. So we syndicate a show out of the States called Modern Jazz Today here, and they've played the record several times. And I'm curious about, if you've grown your audience or kind of like had people who've come at you from something like jazz that wouldn't necessarily be, you know, prog rock, bar rock kind of fans, but are into you from that angle.
Oh, yeah. I guess like yeah, we're like kind of moving away from the bar rock, although like I feel that we can put on a really good show still, and like we're definitely, I think, well equipped to like go from like, you know, like a couple shows on the West Coast tour are like in more kind of jazz clubs, which is like great because most of the band are like U of M jazz students, so we can kind of cater our set to that. But then, modern jazz really just like picked it up, and pretty consistently we're getting played on there. And I've chatted with I can't remember his name, but I've like chatted with him a couple times, and they've been really supportive. So yeah, so we've had people come become fans of the band through that, and it's really helping us meet people in like the U.S. as well, because we will be going down there next year for quite a bit with the release of a new album. We're working with like a booking agent out of California, so I mean, it's been great like to get picked up by like a really cool program and like that. Yeah, it definitely feels good.
Right, and the fact that like it gets broadcast throughout the United States, that certainly gives you a leg up in terms of being on people's radar for bookings.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you mentioned working on a new record. Like, where are things at process wise?
We had two sessions in February, which gave us 7 songs, and those are mostly mixed, like in between tours and just shows and all that. We've been mixing that. Then we're working on 4 new ones then that we're going to be recording in September. So it's coming along. We're going to start releasing little snippets and teasers and a couple of singles in the fall and winter, and then looking at a release for spring, like April-ish, and then we're going to be hitting the road really hard next spring, summer, and fall, and then talking to festivals and locally as well as like some in the U.S. and some in Canada, and I'm feeling really good about the new record. Usually when I hear something that I've worked on and recorded, I really don't like it when I first hear it, but when we got the mixes back, I felt like pretty good about it. Like I'll always have like, oh God, is this any good? You know, like when, you know, when you're like kind of like judging your work, like really, you know, heavy-handedly, like, you know, you want it to be the best it can be. Mm-hmm. But I actually felt really good about hearing them come back, and, you know, like still some work that needs to be done on them. And like, but I think it's going to be a really nice step forward from the first EP to the untitled album that we're working on. So
sonically a continuation of what you guys established on the EP?
It's a continuation, but, there's like a full horn section, a lot more depth and dynamics, you know, like the first EP is pretty like, I don't know how to describe it, but like, a lot more like fast paced, you know, like heavy guitar tones and only a couple of horns. Whereas like this next album, there's a couple more like groovier things, quieter moments, but still a lot of like rock energy, but like a lot more grooves in there. And just more dynamics. We're a little bit more mature, I guess. And there's like a 9-piece band on it, so we have a couple more writers in there and people throwing in their kind of flavor into the mix. But sonically there are definitely some parts that like transfer over from the EP to this for sure. Like some really like so someone said the EP was very like aggressive. And I think that there are still definitely some aggressive parts on the new album, but there's also some more quieter, like chill parts, you know, that'll kind of like draw you in, you know?
Yeah. So have you been playing these songs, these new songs out live at all yet?
Yeah. We've been playing about three of the new ones have made it into the set list, and we're trying them out. And and then we're going to be introducing a couple more. And I don't know how I kind of feel, but like, should you hold back all new material, or should you start playing it live as soon as you feel that it's good to go, or, you know, like testing it out.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I think anyone's going to like hear a new song and then instantly remember it, be like, oh my God, I heard your new song like 6 months ago. And now like, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't know. I've talked to different people, or many people, about this, and you know, some people say, yeah, you know, you have a new song, you're into it, and the audience digs it, play it all the time. And others are like, you know, don't give them anything new until it's like ready to go. So I don't know. We're playing them live, so why not?
Well, maybe people will get a taste next week at the Cavern. Gonna get you to pick a track off the EP though before we go. And if you have a reason why you're picking it, let me know.
Ooh, I'm always partial to a lesson in sharing. I think the melodies are really nice. It's kind of more of an upbeat one. I think it's a lot of fun. We generally close out most shows with it.
Perfect. Well, Ed, best of luck with the entire tour. The kickoff, of course, the Cavern next Friday night. Jeremy and the Delicious Hounds and After Funk on the bill as well. This is A Lesson in Sharing here on 101.5 UMFM.
me when I say I won't make this personal.
One of the young performers at this year's Winnipeg Folk Festival, Tuva Bergson, with her new song, Personal. We're going to hear one more from an up-and-comer. Noah Dirksen, who we have featured in the past year on Thank God It's Free Range, has a new 7-inch, I guess, technically, a single, Nothing, and Wilderness of Oregon. We're going to hear the A side of that in a moment. And right after that, we're going to be talking to Mike Milosh of Rye, who plays the Big Blue at night, capping things off there tonight. And yeah. Keep it locked here on 101.5 UMFM.
Pull me closer just to warm you. It's never felt so good being you. And here I am just hoping that nothing fills the silence of this room. And oh, I guess that I should warn you that there's another point of view. So fix your face towards mine and I'll show you how the world looks back at you. It's true. There's nothing more I want than wanting you. There's nothing more to see than seeing you. There's nothing else that I would rather do. Lying here in nothingness with you. And drive your car up to the country. Say you need some time alone. But I'll be waiting, wanting for you to let me come.
There's nothing else.
All right. Well, Mike Milosh records under the name Rye, playing the Winnipeg Folk Festival tonight, and joins me on the line. How are you doing, Mike?
I'm great. Yeah. Enjoying a beautiful day in Winnipeg right now.
That's great to hear. So do you get a little downtime when you're on the road? Is that something kind of built in? I mean, because I know that you do a lot of kind of your own booking, or at least you had indicated in interviews that you're kind of like your manager.
I mean, I get some downtime. Depends on where we are in the touring. Like, I try to find like time. So like when I went to Japan, I went a week early and I got to hang out and just be like a normal human being. And then other times on tour, I'm getting like 4 hours a night sleep, and we're going from city to city. So it just kind of depends on the routing. And I don't know, it's a mixture. Right now it's intense because we're playing today. And then I think we're getting like 2 hours sleep max. And we got to fly right to New York to a festival in Brooklyn. So it'll be intense 2 days.
That sounds pretty intense. Is the group that you're touring with right now the same configuration that did your Tiny Desk concert recently? Is that the same kind of setup?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be very different because the Tiny Desk was, you know, recording ambient sound,
right,
no amplification and stuff like that. So it'll be a very different vibe. But yeah, it'll be seven people on stage. Pat's not going to be playing guitar for this show because, yeah, he just couldn't make it for this show. So I have a different guitarist playing. But yeah, pretty similar. The other thing is we have a Hammond B3 when we play live, and the Tiny Desk, we couldn't get a Hammond there, and it was too loud. So.
Right. Now, A few interviews that I had read, you know, talking about kind of the gap between the old record and this one, was because you were, you know, touring to pay off the record contract, to buy yourself out from it.
Mm-hmm.
At what point did you decide that that's what you wanted to do? Like, was that really early on in things, or was that kind of like after you were touring for a while? Or
no, I mean, I did the Woman record, and Polydor and me probably just had like a difference of opinion as to how to approach things. And so they decided that they weren't going to continue with the Rye project. And that's kind of what I wanted. But I didn't realize that then the option was going to this other record label, because record contracts, I mean, are incredibly complex. And there's like little details that really can hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
And so originally I was thinking, oh, I'm just not going to do another Rye record. I was going to go and do another Milos record, which is a different sound and a different thing. And I don't know, I just kept getting offers to play live. So then I just kept playing. And then it became this crossing over period where I thought, wow, I've dedicated so much time to this project. Maybe I should do a next record. So then me and my manager, Jeff, talked about it for a long time, looked into what it would take to do it, and started the legal negotiations. And it felt like if we were going to do it, the path of least resistance was to buy them out. And so that took a long time to generate the actual finances for it.
Right.
So, I mean, looking back at it, it sounds crazy. In the middle of it, I just kind of was just taking it as it goes. I wasn't making any big, strong decisions. And then there was this moment I was like, well, I guess I'm going to do this. So I did that, and then it took me about 2 years to actually make the record.
Had you written or started writing any material in that, like in the midst of that legal negotiation and like upheaval?
I did write songs, but not for the Rye record. I just wrote personal stuff. I also write music that I don't put out. I write it for different reasons. Like, I want to fool around with a certain technique or compression technique, or I just do these little geeky experiments and stuff. The Rye record, once I had bought them out, I just started at that point, because I don't like the idea of premeditating things too much. I like to be very in the moment when I'm recording.
Okay.
So, you know, when I knew for the Rye record, I was like, okay, cool, this is a song that I'm going to make for this album. I made way too many songs, though, and I made like 25 songs and cut it back down, like in half.
Right.
So there's a lot of songs that I've kind of let go of, and I don't know if I'm ever going to release them or not, or if they just kind of stay just hidden somewhere on a hard drive, you know?
What was it about those ones, or what was it about the dozen that you kept that made that decision for you?
Well, number one, I knew I wanted this to be a vinyl release. And so you have only a certain amount of time that a record could be to even fit on vinyl, like 43 or whatever minutes, you know. And thinking about it, because I always thought about it as an album. I wasn't just making songs to be singles or anything. I wanted it to be a coherent album. But at the end, listening to everything, certain songs just didn't feel like they fit the whole record. And it's more a feeling than it is something overly analytical. It's more like, okay, this doesn't feel right on this record for this or that reason. The other thing is, I don't like putting a lot of negative things out into the world or that has negative intentions. And there was a couple tracks on this that felt kind of almost angry or negative, and I just didn't really want that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to sing that over and over in live context, you know?
Is that because you kind of have to tap into that anger to play it each time?
Yeah, totally. And I'm not a very angry individual, so I don't want to be on stage kind of channeling this anger like night after night, you know? I think that would, it would kind of wreak havoc on my like mind and body or something.
So you told Billboard that when you were working on the record, you were frustrated with it a bit until you came to Song For You, which you described as the heart of the record. What was it about that song that kind of like turned things around or softened that frustration?
I mean, if I said frustration, maybe that's the wrong word. It's more like I didn't know when the record was finished. And then when I did Song For You, it was like a 2-day recording process. It was very quick, like everything, the strings and like all the lyrics, everything. I just had that kind of like punctuation moment where you're just like, oh, it's finished. It's like known. And I think it's because that feeling that's on Song For You was missing from the record. And to me, that's a very sweet, like beautiful sentiment. And yeah, I mean, I can't control what happens. I don't sit there and plot out like a graph. Like, okay, I need this emotion here. I need this emotion there. It's not like that. But when I finished the song, listened back to it, and then kind of put it in the context of the record, it just, I don't know, it just kind of tied up the record. It just made it feel coherent.
You mentioned, you know, playing around. You like to, you know, play around with things. And one of the things that you did on this record is play drums live. Was that a conscientious choice going into things to do more live recording?
Yeah. I was going up to Big Sur a lot with my girlfriend, and her friend Coco has this old drum kit. And I just was really loving playing it. And I mean, I went to university as a drummer. I played in a lot of bands when I was younger. I was like, why am I neglecting this thing that I love doing? And so I bought this 1965 Ludwig drum kit. And I mean, because I'm kind of like a geek about tone and sound, as soon as I played it, it just sounded so perfect, like the drum set, that I was like, this is going to be the sound of the record. And I think for me, I'm personally getting really tired of like sequenced electronic drum beats that are, everyone kind of sounds the same in a lot of ways. They're just samples. And there's like a magic that's lost in that for me. And bringing back a live drum set onto all the songs just felt, I don't know, it just felt right, felt real. And it's just something I love. Like, I love listening to real drums.
Is that because there's like a looseness to it? Like, it doesn't have that inherent like precision that a drum track would have or has to have?
I mean, there's a siren about to drive by. It's going to get better. But there's ambulance for that. Live drums, I mean, if you want to like really get into it, I think it carries like a natural frequency. Like, it's not a zero and one that's generating a tone. You know, it's like an actual frequency. And your intention is in that. So if you hit the drums hard, it sounds different than if you hit it softly. If you play it with like a vibe, it really comes through where sequencer and electronic beats, you're kind of leaving it up to the sequencer to give you that vibe. And that's like it's a computer, you know, like that's forming that rhythmical sense. Drums, when you play them for real, it's an extension of the rhythms of your body, you know, like your breathing, your heartbeat, the tempo is dictated by what you feel you want the tempo to be. And that's a very different thing. It's less intellectual in a lot of ways, because when you use sample beats and drum machines and sample tones and all that stuff, you're kind of putting things in with clicks of like the mouse, you know? And
right.
So you're using like your intellect to do that. Where drums are just an extension of how you're feeling. And I think that was really important for me on this record.
Is that tied into the same notion that you talked about as far as like your singing, and that when you're willing to spend time with yourself, you can find your own voice, that like, you know, retreating into yourself allows you to focus on kind of the core?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, as long as you're not doing it in a narcissistic way, but it's more of like a discovery,
right.
I think that's something that's really interesting. Yeah, there's another example. There we go. Yeah, there's something really, really interesting about having enough alone time or not too many distractions around you when you're working on anything creative. Because then you're just kind of going deeper, and you're kind of coming to terms with how you really do feel about things that you're saying about. There's no distraction. So there's a meditativeness in that, you know?
Right. Now, I'd read, you mentioned going to school for drumming. I'd read that you'd been in production and sound design in university, but then ended up dropping out.
Pardon?
I'd read that you'd gone into production and sound design in university, but then stopped?
Yeah, I mean, I studied in jazz, then moved over to electric acoustics and sound production. And then for me, the first thing I bought when I realized I wanted to actually take a stab at making music, I bought an MPC 2000. Or Lead One. I just started sequencing synthesizers and recording that, and then that opened up this whole doorway into production. And it's a very costly road, especially when I was starting, because it wasn't as easy with just like a computer. Yeah, I mean, I don't know, there's something really magical about producing in general, because there's no limit. It just kind of, you got to trust your taste and your intuition.
You told Noisy that it was Otecker that kind of got you into that. Which record was it, and what was it about that record that, you know, sparked
it? Well, it was the single Garbage that ended up being on Tri Repete, which is their double disc. It's almost like I'd never heard music like that before. And then I heard that record, and I just had like an aha moment, like, wow, music doesn't have to be one specific thing. It can be anything you want it to be. And I just started looking into everything that they were using, and I'm like, wow, okay. And I kind of bought the Nord League One on a whim. At the time, it was expensive for me, you know? And I mean, I would just play the thing for hours in my living room and recording things to like mini disc and ADAT and just going reviewing things like that, sampling myself, messing around with it. Yeah, just, I mean, there's a huge, like, exploration into sound in general when you grab a synth like that, because it can kind of do so many things. Beautiful instrument.
Was there something that you discovered during that sort of period of exploration that then ultimately informed Blood in any way? Like, is there something that you're drawing on that, you know, this is part of a linear thing for you?
Well, I think everything you do informs what you're going to do next, you know, and it can be negative or positive. For me, the idea of exploring sound in general is something that over like many years I've gotten to this place where now I have targets, like, okay, I want to have this warm tone. I want these wooden tones, or I want to record things this way or that way. Blood's very much about showing the sound of an instrument. So when recording the piano, it's about allowing the pedals, the movement of the pedals to be in the recording and stuff. It's not about being overly perfect. And I think there's a reaction that I've had to things that are all within a controlled environment, with synthesizers and stuff like that, going through a preamp. You're not getting any of the ambient world into the recording, like the natural frequencies and tones and sounds of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I want those to be in there. You know what I mean? Like I want piano tones and the creaking of the bench to be in the recording. I want to make sure it's not as sterile as things can be if you're just kind of either in the box, like in the computer, or only going through signal chains that never are mic'd and exist in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like a reaction to that Blood. It's also coming up with desires for tones that make me feel like nostalgic and warm and yeah, it all kind of leads to that.
Right. Mike, before I let you go, I want to get you to pick a track off of Blood that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking that song or an anecdote about it, I'd love to hear that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, you know what? Actually, I think it'd be pretty interesting to play Blood Nose. It's nothing, I haven't pushed it. And so I don't know if a lot of people are hearing that song. That song came through experimentation at this ambient night that I do with my girlfriend that we call Secular Sabbath. And we bring other musicians that I know to come out and do these experiments. And me and Nate Mercero, who wrote that track together, we did kind of that motif as like a two-hour improv with me singing on it. And we recorded it and listened back to it. And we're like, let's turn this into a song. And we were doing these things to kind of free me up creatively, these kind of really explorational nights where I improv. And I don't know, just that freedom that those experiments gave way to that song. That was kind of a cool track to play.
How did you distill that experimentation down into, you know, a song that fits on this vinyl?
I took the main, like, thump, 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 thump. We took that kind of progression, and some of the vocal lines that I came up with while I was improvising became the, you know, just the main lead line on Blood Nose. Yeah. It's I kind of knew the main part that was calling me when listening back to what we had done in this really long, you know, improv, and just kind of honed in on it.
Cool. Well, we'll give that one a listen, and best of luck tonight at the fest, and safe travels to New York tomorrow.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for the interview. Appreciate it.
Something. is a song then.
Their new record, Generation Frustration, that is 10 String Symphony with I Can't Have You Anymore. Earlier today, my interview with Rachel Bayman of 10 String Symphony aired as part of the Festival Express series, and you can check out the complete interview at UMFM's SoundCloud page, which is soundcloud.com/UMFM1015. You can hear all the rest of the Festival Express interviews as well, unless, of course, you're out at Birds Hill Park enjoying the festival itself. We got a couple of oldies but newies in some sense. Some bands that I haven't heard from in a while have just released some new material. The Caribbean, who years ago, early 2000s, released a record that was a co-present from Tom Lab, the German label, and Endearing Records, the former Winnipeg label. The DC band have a new song out called Vitamin Chip, and then Sweden's Acid House Kings dropped a new EP called Always on Your Side. We're going to play the title track to that. Got a new single from Alba Plano, who we featured here before. Liz Ogumbo, Mitski has a new single. And we're going to close things off with Boniface, who, as this show ends, will be taking the stage at Winnipeg Folk Festival. Enjoy. Stick around for After 8 Radio coming up next. And we'll be back here next week, 6:30 p.m. on Thank God It's Free Range.
Before
times. Well, there's a patch of sun on the floor, the atrium floor. No, mom, to suffocate is closed to everyone except the essential personnel. Essential personnel. Essential personnel. Essential personnel.
Adventure. I ain't gonna tell where we're going, but come on, let's go. Sweet time of thrills, the mountains high, clear ocean view, adventures new, and her maxi or mini, or even in her bikini, it could be warm or chilly, she's on safari.
Safari, safari, midnight in the safari, twin the safari.
Africa, Cassini, I'm a
She's cool. Check out her heels, no fashion rules, and her maxi or mini. It could be chilly, even in her skin is. She's on safari in green or teal. She says she's cool. Check out her heels, no fashion rules, and her maxi or mini. It could be chilly, even in her skin is. She's on safari. Prince the tan your world around. Yellow, orange, reds and blues. Golden undertones and hues. Beautiful inside out. Prince the tan your world around. Yellow, orange, reds and blues. Golden undertones and hues. Pretty people inside out. Prince the tan your world around. High heels, stilettos. Sending out those echoes. Pretty people inside out. Prince the tan your world around. High heels, stilettos. Sending out those echoes. Safari, twin, safari, twin, safari, twin, safari.
feeling so strange. Wake up dreaming of cheap love in airplanes. I could never take what I needed. Our moments of pleasure were fleeting. And lately I've been feeling so cruel. A sweet plastic portrait painted of you. I could never draw out a meaning. Nothing more than a dishonest feeling. But you know it's not. Small town last weekend just to see where my head is. It's not here. All I found was a lounge with a jazz singer. Blue velvet, but how high do we need to get before we see? We're stuck on the ground. I've been saving money for a Greyhound ticket, and I swear I'll be getting out soon. You know I love you, but you. Spending nights away from home, but that's all that I've been doing. It's all that I've been doing.